There may be this thing, you may not have heard of it, but it's called a natural federation where people diet and compete with no drugs at all.
It's just so like the other thing, but without the VAR, right?
Yeah.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the podcast with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally, and all of our programming is brought to you by you, the people of Patreon. In fact, we've got a new Patreon member who just asked us a question that we're going to answer today. We got a couple Patreon questions, actually. And guys, if you're new to our content, let me encourage you to subscribe and hit the bell. We've got several podcasts that come out each week. And all the comments you guys have been doing, all the likes, all that stuff, it really has been helping to boost the show. So thank you for that. Let's keep that going. You guys are freaking awesome. We're brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. Use our code THINK, supplementsource.ca for our Canadians. And we're brought to you by Strom Sports Nutrition. Last but not least, evalbloodanalysis.com. Get your lab work done by Dave. You like that?
There's this weird yellow thing in the sky.
Did you see the eclipse yesterday? Did you guys have the eclipse over there? Do you have the same sun we have here?
I don't know. I don't think so, because we never see it.
We had the solar eclipse yesterday, and Victoria and I sat outside and watched it, and it was pretty cool. I'll try to run a picture in here, but guess what? I think everybody in the world had an opportunity to see it if they wanted to. We've got a lot of listener questions, Dave, and you just got back from your procedure. Are you feeling all right? You good to do the show today?
Don't know. You have to be nice to me. If you stress me out too much, I might have an episode.
With this new thing that you have, is there a button I can press that will shock you in your heart?
No.
Like as a practical joke, sometimes I just like sneak up on you and press the button. No.
Powerful magnets can screw it up, apparently. Okay. So I have to be careful. You know the security things in shops?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I can go through them, but I'm not allowed to stand near them for extended periods of time.
What about the airport?
Yeah, apparently I can't go through those machines at all. I have to be manually searched. And Bluetooth can screw with it a bit as well, apparently.
Really? No kidding.
Huh. So it's stuff like I'm not allowed to have headphones, sit near it, or things like that. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm waiting. It's not a docking station, but I get like a download station that will sit in the bedroom. Mm-hmm. And basically when I go to bed on a night, it will link up and it downloads information from the machine and sends it to my cardiologist.
That's pretty cool. I like hearing that. Well, I'm glad to know that they're keeping on top of it. And just to reiterate, this procedure was because right now they know you're healthy enough to do it. And they're like, hey, because of your heart issues, 15 years down the road, you may need this. And at that time, who knows how healthy you'll be. So let's get this machine in you now, right?
Yeah, it's in, and so far it's been fine.
All right. Yeah, I misunderstood. I thought it was last week or this upcoming week, and other people were saying that too. They're like, see, we have a good luck for Friday, Big Dave. But guys, it's been done. Dave's back. So anyway, I'm glad to have you back, man. We're glad you're okay.
Yeah, I'm fine. I had it done, and then I drove up to Aberdeen for the Granite City show. Did a seminar on the Saturday, which was quite good.
No rest.
That lasted about three hours, I think that went on for. 3 hours I talked bollocks for.
Did anybody actually listen?
I think there was two people.
Two? And then one of them was your wife, right?
One of them was in a wheelchair and his carer had pissed off so he couldn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
No, it was all right, actually. It wasn't a bad little setup. And then the show was very busy on the Sunday, very busy. We had to leave early just because of travel time, because it's like 7 hours.
Okay. Well, listen,
but
we've got a ton of listener questions, and if you guys want to take part in the next show, then jump right in. Comment with your questions. We'll tackle it on the next show. Plus, all your comments and stuff, all those things, they help to boost us in the algorithm, as I mentioned earlier. I wanted to start with this one. If you remember, Dave, last week we had a guy say that he hadn't competed in a long time, wanted to get back into it, falling in love with the idea of prep, but not so much falling in love with gear. He said, hey, could I run 25R with my TRT? And just do that and do a contest. And of course, we answer. We're like, hey, you can do whatever you want, really. And if that's what you wanted to do, go for it. I think there is a conversation to be had there. And we kind of got into it about like risk to reward And you know, how high can you go before that risk starts to increase? I think that'll be different for everyone. But we got a comment. We kind of got it like a little bit of a hater comment, I think. And I'm not going to put it up because we're trying to avoid putting doses on the screen nowadays. He says, nobody is winning any contest under 2 grams of gear. Stop lying about dosages and just say it. What are you taking? What are you talking about? 25 milligrams of VAR. Who would do right. that crap?
First of all, he said whether he could compete, not on about winning, just being able to compete. And there may be this thing, you may not have heard of it, but it's called a natural federation where people diet and compete with no drugs at all.
It's so just like the other thing, but without the VAR, right?
Yeah. So you don't actually need drugs if you want to compete.
Yeah.
Yes. Obviously, drugs can improve. You know, in fact, I'm very much of the opinion that drugs don't necessarily improve condition, because when you look at natties, those boys come in peeled.
Yeah, yeah.
Dude, they don't come loss, in smooth.
The fat loss aspect, and I'm going to get to one of our Facebook users. She asked, what was the best fat loss? Well, she said best anabolic to aid in fat loss. Man, the fat loss is really all about the diet. I mean, the fat burners, they're icing on the cake, you know, Clan T3, all that stuff. But you're not going to be able to get there without the diet. The diet, then the cardio, then the other accoutrements. Do you like that? Accoutrements, Dave.
Yeah, I mean...
oh, Dave.
It's... sorry, I had to text the wife. Yeah, it's... I mean, regards that comment... I know a very good pro who won Rookie of the Year and placed at the Olympia, and I don't believe he had gone over 700 meg total. There are genetic freaks out there.
Yeah, yeah. I commented back to him. I mentioned that, you know, so I don't do a ton of contest prep. The reason being is because it takes up a lot of time to do contest prep, especially the way I do. I'm basically having people check in every day. I enjoy doing it, but I try not to do a ton of preps because I end up just investing so much energy. That said, I could introduce you to two gentlemen that not only won their shows, but won their pro cards at under, well under 2 grams. Like we're talking a gram, you know, won pro cards. At that level.
I agree.
Guys with muscle. So it can be done. But not everybody. Those are the individuals. There's a lot of genetics at play.
There is a lot of genetics at play, and that is the big factor. But there is also a lot of people that just, well, I suppose you could argue this is genetics as well, just aren't capable of putting the hard work in or don't want to put the hard work in, and as a result, use drugs as a crutch. To say that you need 2 gram to compete, particularly on a local level or particularly up to a national qualifier level, would bore me a reflection of your situation rather than everyone else's. And though I don't want to be insulting, if you need 2 gram to compete and be competitive at a local show, I would seriously be questioning everything else that you're doing, because that definitely isn't necessary. I've got lots of people to pro qualifiers on lot lower doses.
George White, he said, I competed 4 times naturally and several times not. Condition was the same. He said muscle mass wasn't.
Yeah, I know several pros. I know what they've done. I know what they're currently doing to be competitive. And though they are over the 2, they're not massively over the 2.
Yeah.
And these are guys that are reasonable genetics. You'd need that to be a pro in the first place. But a couple of them are grafting, you know what I mean? They're having to work very, very hard to be competitive as a pro. It's not being gifted to them in any way. There will always be high users. There will always be those that need a little bit more. But I do think this fallacy that you have to be on grams and grams of gear to be a pro is bullshit. But at the same time, yes, there are drugs. And yes, some people will need more than others. And no, you're not standing on an Olympia stage on 800 mg a week for 90% of people.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. And you can see it too. And I don't want to belabor it too much because we don't have like actual proof that we can show people here. We can't like lay it out for them. But Dexter Jackson competed for nearly 30 years and he couldn't have handled those types of doses for that long. But you do see guys that blast up, right? And they look fantastic. They've got a nice little run for a few years and then they come back down. There's a reason they weren't able to maintain that as long as Dexter did, you know? They had to do more than Dex.
I know several pros that are honest about their doses and their online formats. You know, they're open, so James Holling said, Cuba, all very open about what they use and how much they use, and they're not lying.
Yeah. Anyway, I just wanted to pick that guy out because, you know, he's in part right, but he's also in part not right. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I agree. You know, it is not a requirement that it happens, and plenty of people do. There's no denying that, but it is not an essential requirement. There are those that can be very competitive up to a decent level on quite low doses. Joyce, IFBB Pro, very low user.
I don't know.
No, he's one of the dwarf classes. I think he's 212.
Okay. All right, listen. Let's move on to some questions we can give people tangible answers to. We'll get back to the female anabolic question. How about this one, though? Does scar tissue relate to the length of the needle or the diameter? If both, which is more inflammatory?
The broader the needle, the more initial scar tissue you're going to create because you're disturbing a larger circumference of muscle mass. Length of needle isn't the issue. Depth of injection. Well, obviously, the deeper you go into the muscle, the more muscle you're going to disrupt. So therefore, there's a longer scar. But the length of needle has no correlation to the depth of needle in essence. You could put an inch needle in, quarter of an inch. You could put an inch needle in 3/4 of an inch, same needle, bigger scar from 3/4 of an inch of depth. Scar tissue is more the repetition of the site than directly the needle size to an extent. Yes, a slim pin is going to be much less impacting than a green, but I would say that the biggest influence factor is usage of the site.
Yeah, like the frequency. I would agree with that. And there's a trade-off, you know, if you have, say, a 23 gauge, when you press that oil in, the pressure of that oil entering the muscle is going to be a lot lower than, say, a 29 gauge insulin pin. And if you think about a garden hose, think about like no nozzle and the water pouring out of that versus if you put your fingers over it and then point it at Dave, you know, which I would do that totally right now as a demo if we were in the backyard.
No, I agree, and that is something to factor in is disruption to the tissue due to the velocity, the pressure of the oil that's coming through. You know, I mean, high power jet washers will take paint off things.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I know we're not using a high weber, but the point is, pressure does have an impact at the end of the needle in the muscle. So. But scar tissue could be broken down. Deep tissue work is going to remove a lot of scar tissue. So it's not something that needs to be a permanent state of play.
So, go ahead.
I was just going to say the same with calcification. Calcification will occur as well. And again, that can be broken down with deep tissue work.
Yeah. I used glutes only 2 shots a week for my first couple cycles. And I noticed I started building up scar tissue and I started getting the Rice Krispies, the snap, crackle, pop, you know, and I backed off of those sites for a while and it did heal. Like it took time, but it did heal, you know, so I do believe that you can help that to recover to some extent. And I probably caught it early enough. You know what I mean? If you ignore that, and you keep trying to put it in the same spot over and over again. I think you're in for trouble. I think volume of oil has something to do with it too. You know what I mean? Like if you're doing 3 cc shots in that muscle, I do think that that's going to take longer to recover than if you're doing, you know, I'll go extreme, a half cc. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think volume plays a role. I mean, you're disturbing the tissue with the volume of oil. So it all has a, you know, an impact.
And how steady is your hand? Especially for new guys, if your hand is kind of like shaking and moving all around, you're going to get a lot more pain after that administration, you know?
True.
All right. What else do we have here, Dave? Love the information and content. Do y'all think that the ECA stack is good for fat loss? And if so, what dose would be recommended or even spot injections of Yohimbine and Clen? Would these be good for stubborn fat areas like love handles?
No, I don't. The only thing I know that will spot reduce is PGF2A.
I thought there was. So Clen, Yohimbine combo and an injection is known as Helios. I thought my understanding is that there is some level of localized effect, though you are getting a systemic effect once it enters your bloodstream. It's not just staying there.
Yeah, my understanding is that there is, but it's not right. So say you had fat, lower stomach.
Yeah.
And you inject in the left-hand side of your fat of your lower stomach, you may get a slight reduction in fat in that very small localized area, but you're not losing fat from across the stomach band.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you got
that's my
point. You grit it out. So people grit it out usually. One inch apart?
Yeah, but that's not using Helios, is it? That's using the other stuff, the fat dissolving shots.
No, with Helios, meaning like if you grit it out and then you do a daily administration, you're supposed to go no closer than 2 inches to the navel. And then, but you go, say, 2 inches out from the navel, then 3 inches out the next day, 4 inches out the next day. You know what I'm saying? You kind of grid that out is what I've seen people do.
I would. Okay. Well, if people have experienced noticeable fat loss specific to that area, then fair enough. But I would have thought that there would have been a total fat loss and it wouldn't have been overly specific if you're talking about one shot in a 2-inch area every day over. I mean, when you do the fat dissolving shots, it's one shot every 2-inch every couple of days.
Okay.
Or every week. So you'd grid it out, but you'd actually do a shot in every 2-inch grid each time.
Oh, wow. So you're doing multiple administrations in that same day. Wow.
Yeah. And that's specific to dissolving fat. So I can't see there being a huge localized impact from Helios by doing it in the format of one shot per day. But, I mean, if you need to put it in somewhere, why not? Yeah, I don't see there being an issue.
Yeah, I'm more of a fan. I've only used it with clients a few times. Every time that I've used it, it's because they've had it and they told me that they wanted to use it. It's never been something where I've been like, oh, you should pick this up. We should use this. It's somebody who already had it. They wanted to use it. I generally go with oral. And at the end of the day, like I was saying, you're going to get a systemic effect once you've taken that shot anyway. Mm-hmm. We do have to keep in mind, and this is just from a dieting standpoint, that we all have trouble areas. That there's generally for men, love handles, lower stomach, those areas tend to be more of the problem areas. And for women, a lot of times like the hips, the glutes, the hamstrings, and those will usually be the last areas to go. In order to get rid of that fat, you have to keep dieting, you know. These things, whether they may help or not, I've never relied on them. I've gotten people to the point that those areas have gone, but they're going to be the last spot to go. And they're usually going to be the first spot to come back too. Once you get rid of it, even if you look peeled everywhere else, once I've gotten rid of their trouble spots, then my brain is locked in on those trouble spots when we start filling back out. You know, I want to watch your lower back. If you have a hard time getting your lower back in shape, I want to make sure that, like, okay, you might have your abs still. You might even have veins in your abs still, but I'm keeping an eye on what's that lower back doing, because that's going to be our, at the end of the day, we're only as lean as our fattest area.
Do you find, though, that when someone's got truly lean, particularly if they've held it for a number of weeks, that those trouble areas are much less troubling moving forward?
That's a good question. And I think this. So I think that, yes, they still can be. That, like, if you're predisposed to have low back fat more than somebody else, that you're probably still going to always get that. But I have seen this where somebody's maybe they've not been on anything, right? They're completely natural, and they have fat deposits based off of how their hormonal setup is. Then they go on gear, and I think that those fat deposit, like that stuff can change to some degree. Meaning, you never come back off. You're now on TRT after the cycle. You may store fat differently than you had previously. There may be something to that, just based off of what I've seen. But I still see that even if it does change to a degree, if your low back is a problem, you've got a lot of fat cells there, you're probably always going to have them there unless you got them sucked out, you know?
I've found when you take clients super lean and maintain that for a period, that in general, their predisposition to gaining fat does seem to change a little bit. And you tend to be able to hold condition a lot easier.
Yes.
Once you've got that initial deep cut out of the way. But it's getting that deep cut because obviously when you've carried fat for a long time, you'll get to a certain level and then it does getting. You have to be so much more extreme to get it really down. Or you need to hold that level for a period of time to make that become the normal baseline and then push again from there rather than trying to do it in one continuous drop.
Yeah. I would agree that once you get rid of it, it's easier to keep it off than it is to get it off. Mm. There's no question. Mm-hmm. All right. What else do we have here? One of the common questions we get asked by you guys is, what would you do differently with your bodybuilding if you could go back in time? Given all the experience and education I have today, there's a number of things that I would have done differently. One of them is that I would have started using collagen sooner. Collagen is one of the few supplements that will actually rebuild connective tissue. It took me tearing my supraspinatus in 2021 to get with the program. I use True Nutrition's hydrolyzed beef collagen. I get the unflavored version. I pay for it myself, just like you guys do. I use 20 grams a day, mix it into my coffee. It's totally unflavored. You don't even taste it. Plus, I use 10 grams of their micronized creatine. Creatine has been shown to improve brain health, especially for the aging brain. I need that. And of course, you know, we've always known about the muscle building effects. So this is my morning routine every day, and I'm encouraging you guys to do the same. Use our code THINK for savings. Plus, it's the only way for them to know that this advertising is being heard. Otherwise, they just think you're some random dude that clicked on an ad.
Ain't nothing to it but to do it.
All right, finished an 18-week cycle, 650 test and HCG at 1,000 IU per week. Plus an AI. He says his estradiol was 350 pmol and I managed to drop it. Last bloods were mid-range. I plan to jump on TRT. I struggle to maintain an erection sometimes. I feel like loss of sensitivity. I don't have the same libido as pre or during cycle. What would be wrong now considering the bloods look perfect? Thanks for the education.
So he said his estrogen's fine. What's his testosterone level?
He doesn't say. He says says last bloods were mid-range.
What was mid? But wasn't he talking about estrogen before that? So was he saying estrogen's mid-range or what?
My estradiol was around 350 pmol. And I managed to drop it. I don't know what he means by I managed to drop it.
Well, I'm assuming that when he was on cycle, his estrogen was 350.
Yeah.
Which is just around double top end PMOL.
Okay.
And then he's taken the AI and brought it down. But the relevance is, where is your estrogen? Where is your testosterone now?
In free test.
Yeah. So they're the numbers we need to know before we can really comment on that question, to be fair.
All right. Can you get a female pregnant while on testosterone or maybe with HCG2 He says or TRT.
No, you can definitely get a female pregnant while on cycle. I've done it twice.
You've done it. You were on gear both times. Were you on like full blown cycles at the time?
Yeah, full blown cycles.
No kidding.
Decker as well.
Decker to you. There ain't no stopping Dave when he wants to get a job done. That's all you got to say.
So, to explain the processes.
Wait, are you going to explain the process of how you made babies?
Yes.
Because that's not for the show, Dave. That's a different program.
You get your finger and you stick it in the rear. And you wiggle it about a bit. And that's how you make babies. Wow. So, in a natural individual, obviously FSH and LH come down from the pituitary. LH stimulates test. FSH stimulates sperm production. Testosterone levels within the testes are extremely elevated in comparison to circulating blood levels. I think it's about 50 times.
Okay.
Testosterone itself can stimulate the Sertoli cells to produce sperm. So when you go on cycle, obviously your signal hormones stop working. But you have elevated testosterone levels, and that elevation and circulating testosterone can still stimulate the Sertoli cells to produce sperm. I would argue from experience, not scientifically, but from experience, that maintaining a healthy level of testosterone, be it via TRT, would probably be more beneficial towards fertility than having a very low testosterone level because you've come off and you failed to recover. Because at least having circulating testosterone levels will aid sperm production through that direct stimulation. The reason you use HCG alongside TRT is because it increases something known as ITT, which is intertesticular testosterone, hence creating a more positive environment for testosterone to stimulate the Sertoli cells to produce sperm. If you want direct stimulation of those cells, you need HMG.
I've worked with a number of clients who, when I say a number, it's under five, who have unintentionally gotten their lady or some girl they're sleeping with pregnant during a cycle, unintentionally. And then I've worked with a number of guys who have intentionally wanted to and were successful as well. Guys who had been using gear long term. Some of them were able to still stay on and get it done while using HCG. Others came off and ran HCG Clomid or HCG Clomid and HMG as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's no, I don't think there's a fixed right way with this. I've helped a few people with fertility protocols, and I would say the same number that have done a PCT have managed to sustain some fertility in the same way that those who've gone on TRT. The only thing I will say is that if you do PCT and it's unsuccessful, then there may be a problem actually creating the act in the first place if your test is stupidly low levels because you're not going to be able to do it physically.
John Meadows talked about that when he was trying to get his wife pregnant. he said that he was struggling because his test was so low, he just wasn't interested. So it's definitely not going to happen if you guys aren't doing the deed.
Yeah. So that there is definitely – so don't think that TRT is a death sentence to fertility. It's not. In certain scenarios, it can actually be a positive move towards towards fertility. But it is – the way I always look at it is if you want to try a PCT in recovery, do that first. If that's not successful, then what have you got to lose by going on TRT? At least you're going to feel better.
Yeah, and I'm a big advocate of getting your sperm checked if this is what your goal is. You want to find out what's going on. A lot of times guys are like, well, I'll just get on all these different compounds and stuff. You know, I would prefer to find out first, like, well, what's going on? Where are your sperm levels? And if they're in the crapper, then we could start a protocol. And then maybe 4 weeks, 6 weeks later, let's check again and see, well, is this stuff helping? You know, because there's another aspect to this. Let's say that we tweak everything out. Your sperm is like super sperm now, right? You still have to rely on, you're only covering 50% of the equation. You have an entire other human being that also needs to be in the optimal position. And that's what
just,
okay. Yeah. Victoria, yeah, that's where her wheelhouse is helping women. And man, a lot of times that's even trickier.
I was just going to say, I've had a few people where they've been struggling with fertility and they've done several protocols to try and improve, assuming that it was them that was causing the issue because of their steroid use. And it turns out it wasn't. It was their partner that just wasn't in a position to be able to become pregnant, not them.
Yeah. All right. Let's see what else do we have here. How about this one from Max Payne? He says, hi, Scott and Dave. I plan to do a cycle and then TRT. PCT doesn't help to keep muscle for me. What would be the minimum TRT dosage to keep muscle? And what would be your maximum TRT dose that you would go to and why? He says he's 84 kilograms, around 15% body fat.
TRT dose is specific to where your levels are. So for most people, I would start them on 60 milligrams of Testy or SIP twice a week. And then after 6 weeks, I would test levels and see where they are sitting. I would be aiming for someone to be somewhere around the 20 to 24 NMOL, if we're talking UK. That seems to give the best balance for benefit against managing negatives like blood thickening, lowering of HDL. At that level of body weight, I would suggest that if he's losing size when he comes off cycle, or he's needing to run TRT above range in order to maintain size, the problem is not his hormones, the problem is his diet or his training. Because I've maintained very high levels of mass with legit regular TRT. Okay, I wouldn't maintain them for long term, but I'd definitely maintain them for a long enough break between cycles. There'd be very little loss. So if you're dropping tons of size, and we've covered this loads of time, there isn't a TRT for muscle size. There is just TRT. People will come up with sports TRT and all this, and it's just bullshit. They are just excuses to take more drugs because they're insecure and scared of losing muscle. There is no justification other than the wanting to use more drugs for longer periods of time and wanting to dress it up in a way so you don't have to admit that you are using higher level of drugs. It's effectively anything above a TRT dose, which is a dose that puts you at an optimum natural range, that's where a TRT dose is. Mm-hmm. It's what puts you at an optimum natural range. So there's no prerequisite for that. It can be very different. I've known guys need as high as 300 milligrams.
Yep.
And I've known guys need as low as 80 milligrams. It is very much down to the individual. But the average tends to be somewhere between 100 and 150 milligrams a week.
I'd agree with that.
If you want to use more, that's fine. You can use more. That's your choice. It's your body. You can do what the fuck you want. I don't have an issue with that. What I have an issue with is dressing up those increased doses as being some form of TRT. They are not. They are a low cycle. It is a very low cycle, but they are still a low cycle. TRT is that. It is testosterone replacement therapy. It is a therapeutic dose that replicates natural levels. So there is no dose to maintain more muscle mass. TRT is just TRT. That's a standalone entity. If you need to run higher levels of drugs to maintain more muscle mass, then I would start to question your training and your diet efficiency. There are people with very high levels of muscle mass above their natural baselines that will need to run a higher dose to maintain that for a prolonged period of time, definitely, but not at 83 kilos or 85 kilos, wherever you are.
Yep, that's where I was going, man. There's something off in the diet and training if you can't maintain. Granted, question though for him would be, what are you defining as muscle? Are you on cycle? Let's say you're on cycle and you immediately gain 8 pounds in the first 2 weeks. And then from there, you gain a pound or two every week and you're up 20 pounds. After you come off cycle, are you dropping 8-10 pounds out the gate, but you're still 8 pounds up? You know what I'm saying? Or did you drop 20 pounds? Because the reality is that the weight that you gain isn't really necessarily muscle. You're going to get more partitioning into the muscle of glycogen, more fluid retention, all of that, you know, and that's just temporary. Whether you're on TRT or not, that's going to go away when you come back down to normal levels or come off.
Yeah, I mean, I can fully appreciate an argument where PCT isn't sustaining size because you're not recovering. You know, if you do a cycle, do a PCT, and you don't recover, and you've got low test level, yes, you're going to drop muscle tissue. That's definitely, you know, a given. But if you're going on TRT, all you need to do, or all you should need to do, is replicate natural levels. And even someone who's 50, 60 pound above baseline should be able to hold the vast majority of any muscle tissue they've gained for 10, 12 weeks before they start seeing any sort of negative dips. If everything else is on point, unless there's something particularly unique about you as an individual when it comes to genetics and muscle mass. I've seen people hold muscle for very extended periods of time with legit TRT dosing, upwards of 6 months plus. But for most people, what I've seen is around the 3 month mark, you may see a little bit dip in performance then, but most people are definitely going back on at that point anyway.
I'll give a really great example of a guy who just did his first cycle. So we worked together. He competed last year in our state championships here in Michigan. He did it naturally in classic, and he did really good in the novice division. I can't remember where he placed in open. Conditioning was awesome. Obviously, the problem is his first show, he wasn't as big as the guys that were at the top of that class. He decided after this contest season, I want to do a cycle, but I wanted to compete naturally first. I wanted to get a good foundation. So we get his test levels checked before he does a cycle. His testosterone isn't great. Okay. It is lower end of normal. We do the cycle and now he's come off. He's done his PCT. We're, I believe, 4 weeks after PCT is over. We're going to wait another 4 weeks and then we're going to get his labs done again. But he's feeling good. And get this. So he is still gaining now after the cycle is over. We were able to go. He wasn't fat. He's still not fat now. You still see the outline of his abs and everything. He is like in the upper 190s. And each week now, we are still going up about a pound every week, every week, every week. And he is a good month after PCT is over. So like, because he's at a lower weight, you know what I mean? I think he can keep doing that. Had he been 260, I wouldn't see him going up a pound. You know what I mean?
No, not at all. I mean, if you're 60, 80 pound above where your baseline was when you started, then obviously I agree that there can be an increased need for hormones to be elevated to maintain that. But even then, even guys that are quite a way above their baseline, you know, natural muscle levels, they'll usually hold muscle for a good couple of months before they start seeing any degradation.
Yeah. All right. How about this one? This was a response to some stuff we were talking about last week. He says, "Mast sucks. Don't understand all that like it. It adds zero muscle for me, and it makes me very flat. Just awful." I've never found, my response to him, Dave, I've never found a compound that actually, like anabolic, that actually makes you flat.
I'm just wondering if it's an estrogen level issue.
Ah, that could be an interesting point.
That's the only thing I can think of is an estrogen level issue. There is estrogens going too low. As we've discussed in the past, on paper, mast is a sturm. So it doesn't lower estrogen, it blocks receptors. But in reality, and I know Vigorous Strieve has got documents, you know, has got evidence on this as well from him personally, I do see mast lower some people's estrogen.
Yeah, I've seen it for some, for sure.
Yeah. So it's definitely is capable of loaning estrogen. And it may be in this individual that that's what's happening, and his estrogen is going too low, which is why he's not getting much in the way of gains, and he is feeling flat.
Yeah, I guess that would be a possibility, wouldn't it?
Mm.
All right, what else do we have here? I think we had a couple Patreon questions. Patreon question here from Diego. He says, what would be the ideal rest time between sets? And are there breathing techniques that I should consider?
Breathing techniques?
Yeah, breathing techniques, Dave. You know, like the thing you do with your lungs?
What, for lifting?
I don't know. Maybe he means like between sets. Maybe he means like, should I be doing something specific? I don't know, Dave. I've never been taught any breathing techniques between sets, but I would say you want to keep doing it.
That's recommended. I had a bad habit of holding my breath on the eccentric to the point where I've even gone a bit because I forgot to breathe. Especially when you've got those last grinders, you know what I mean? And I always found if I was on something that was being a particularly slow rep, for whatever reason, be it deliberate or be it because it was a last grinder and it was heavy, the point where I had to take a breath, there was a sudden drop in power at that point. But in between, I would just suggest that you regulate your breathing as quickly as you can. You want to get away from a panted state into a controlled, regulated breathing state as quick as you can. And a lot of that is going to be down to your cardiovascular fitness as well. So, but I've always tried to control my breathing in the sense of, you know, deep and controlled breaths, but never actually used any sort of technique for that. It's just been a case of trying to get breathing back to a recovery point.
What's up, Kyle Becker? Kyle Becker says square breathing. I think Kyle means like box breathing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's that will help with all sorts of things, including stress and anxiety as well. But you know what? I just realized I had got something lined up for Uncle Dave's, and I've forgotten it.
Did you write it down?
Did I bollocks?
Dave, you're supposed to write these things down.
Yeah, I went through it in my head and all that. All right, good one, and I forgot it.
Yeah, Kyle's talking about box breathing. And it's interesting because this, it's great. Like this will basically, it's the equivalent of like restarting the hard drive, like a hard restart on your computer. I don't know if I necessarily do it between sets, but
I'm not so sure that's going to be particularly recovery beneficial between sets. It will lower heart rates and stuff, but I think post set, you're wanting to get decent levels of oxygen in, so I would just be a case of good, solid, deep, regulated breathing rather than the box, to be honest.
Box breathing I use in basically it's going to affect the sympathetic nervous system and bring you down, you know, release that fight or flight, get you down into that rest and digest. And it works amazingly. Like if I'm under anxiety of any type, I use it. When I do any type of like shooting competition or I take a class where you're on the timer, there's a lot of pressure on you, which it's intentional. They put that pressure on you because then it's harder to like do intricate movements with your hands and be able to keep track of counts and numbers. So when you get ready, I start box breathing and I'll run through an entire cycle. And exactly as Kyle's saying, they have little GIF or GIFs, whatever. Do you call it a GIF or a GIF, Dave? The little pictures that move on the internet? I think it's a GIF.
I don't know.
Comment and tell me, because I really don't even freaking know. But it's like a moving little picture for, you know, 4 seconds. It's a four count. Inhale, 4 count, hold. 4 count, exhale. 4 count, hold. Even the Navy SEALs use it before they like bust in and like, you know, do some crazy Navy SEAL stuff.
So are you going to use this before you go mad in the mini version of Killdozer?
Wah, wah, wah. Dave, my goal is to save humanity. Let me tell you that. But it does work. Do you do? I know you've talked about meditation. Do you do box breathing ever?
I don't. I tend to just do a regulated control breathing count. But the principles are exactly the same. The idea of the box breath is that because you hold it, it throws you out of your natural instinct to try and take a breath, and there's throws you out of an instinctual rhythm and creates a forced rhythm that then means everything comes down and you get control of it all. I mean, generally speaking, post-working sets, I was usually...
Kyle Becker says it's get like gift, but without the T. So it's a gif.
I would usually find that the last thing I had at the end of a working set was any level of anxiety. I was voot. You know, I mean, I was just, what an oxygen.
You're just trying to catch your breath. Breathing.
Yeah, but there was no level of heightenedness at that point. I was just like, fuck, that weight's off me.
Yeah. All right, how about this one from Luke over at Patreon? He says, I was doing flat bench, and he's a new Patreon subscriber, so thank you very much for your support, Luke. He says, I was doing flat bench back in October of 2023, and I felt something in my shoulder rip. It sounded like paper tearing. Turns out, it was 100% rupture of the supraspinatus in my left shoulder. I had a supraspinatus tear in 2022 or 21, I think. It wasn't a complete rupture, thankfully, and I healed it. He said, I had the surgery on 12/27/23, and it was released to begin to push again. But I am starting over, or at least it feels like I'm starting over. I started 4 IUs of generic growth about 2 weeks after the surgery. Been on that daily ever since. So my question is, adding in a low dose of Anavar to assist healing alongside with the growth? He says, I'm on 160 TRT per week. Also, I'm 37 years old for information. He says, love the show. Thanks again, Luke.
Right. The date was December last year. Was that when he had the surgery?
Yeah. So, 12/27, he had the procedure done and was just released to begin to push again.
Right. That seems a long recovery. I mean, I know it's quite a complex area of the body, but was that four months?
Yeah, well, no, that was months. Yeah, about
nearly
yeah,
three and
about,
a half months.
Yeah.
I've with any of the tears I've rehabbed, I found it was. I mean, yeah, it will help, but I found the problem with any of the chemical adhesions was that they helped the tissue recovery, but didn't necessarily mean that everything was strong. And I still needed to go through the extra height size rehab to build up the strength of the component that I'd recovered, be it muscular or tendon.
Yeah.
So I did very much, I started with high rep sets of, say, 30 reps, lightweight, and then be it daily or weekly or bi-weekly, depending on what it was I was working on, I would reduce the rep by one or two and increase the weight by a very small amount. So gradually over a period of 3-4 months, I got back into working weights. And because it's volume of load that's going to strengthen a tendon. It's not necessary, though the drugs will help the tissue, everything knit together and be repaired, it's not going to build that integral strength without exercise. That's what it needs. I mean, this is on an unexercised tendon, anabolics will actually weaken it. But what stops it from the caveat of this, the trade-off of this, is in every tendon rupture in anabolic tendon steroid users, they've never seen a weakened tendon. But when they add anabolics to a tendon in a petri dish, it weakens the tendon. And the reason is exercise.
Okay.
So the anabolics allows us to move more load, which means the tendon gets more stress and gets stronger. So in an actual exercise format with anabolic use, yes, you see tendon integrity increase, but it's the exercise that is creating that tendon integrity increase. Yeah. When you use anabolics on the tendon in a non-exercise format, it actually weakens it.
That's right.
Which is why if you look at some of the early steroid warnings, it was steroids will weaken tendon and increase the risk of muscle tears. when actually it's the exercise combined with the anabolic and allowing you to use more load from the anabolic that has a net increase in tendon integrity. So the anabolic's not going to have a huge impact on the recovery in that sense, but it will allow more load to be moved quicker, which will help with tendon integrity. So the key factor there is the training. So I would get back to physical rehab as quick as possible, because that's the thing that's going to make the big difference.
Yeah. So one thing I didn't understand until I tore my supraspinatus was that it's those therapy exercises that are supporting the structures that allow you to do the overhead movements that allow you to train your shoulders. And those were the things that I wasn't dealing with before. Yeah, that's like one of them, you know, definitely. Dave's doing the old school rotator cuff exercise. Yeah, yeah. You know, and so what I ended up doing was I found three or four exercises that worked really good for me. One of my favorites, I don't know if you guys have seen this, you use a short band between your arms so that way you have to pull it apart just slightly. And then you go up against a wall with a foam roller and then you roll the foam roller up and down. And oh my God, that was my absolute favorite. Hit me up, Luke, if you want me to show you a demo on that exercise. I've got a good one. And I think I have a few videos that I have saved privately on the channel that I just sent to clients.
Be careful, Luke, of what pictures he sends you.
Yeah, not those videos. That's on my OnlyFans, guys. That's my completely different subscription service.
There'll be pics of the D in there, so just be careful.
So you're absolutely right. You nailed it. And I worked those things in as part of my shoulder exercise. So instead of like going in and saying, okay, I'm going to do push, which is going to be like chest and shoulders, and do the traditional overhead press, lateral raises, I would start out with those movements first. Also, supplement wise, I don't know if he's using collagen. That's when Dante turned me on to collagen. I started using True Nutrition's hydrolyzed beef collagen. I used 30 grams a day for like the first 6 months. Now I back down. I use 20, but I use that every day, mix it in my coffee. And I also am using or had used during that time UC2, not the movie UC2, but under construction, but it's undenatured type 2 collagen. So hydrolyzed beef collagen, you get type 1 and type 3 collagen, which are two of the things that will actually help to rebuild connective tissue. And then undenatured type 2 collagen is the third form that you don't get through using collagen supplements. So those are the things you really want to get in your body. And then the Anaphar, what would you think? Would that be a good move then with all of this stuff in play?
I find the Anaphar more soft tissue than tendon related. So I think it would help more within a muscular tear rather than a tendon damage, but it definitely won't do any harm.
Okay.
All right. I'd also be considering BPC.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's a good move, too. Oh, it's my timer.
Oh, Scott, you've got your phone on in the podcast. Aren't we upset, children? Are we disappointed with Scott? Yes, everybody. Tell Scott how disappointed you are.
All right. I think that was about it. There were a couple more, but we usually can't get to all of them. Dave, I know that you've been working long and hard and that you had a great Uncle Dave's advice for us today. You wrote it down because it was so important to share it with the show, didn't you?
I did have a really good one, you know. I'm gutted. I really was proud of myself. I was proud of myself for actually coming up with one and not having to make it up on the spot.
You're going to remember this. You're going to remember it, too, like 3 minutes after we get off the air.
It'll be 3 o'clock in the morning. I'll be sat on the bog having a shit or something, and it will just pop into my head. So I'm going to say something.
I'm not sure what it is yet.
No, I'm not. I'm formulating. It's like, no, I have a thing. It's not that I don't know what it is. It's how I say it in the right way.
Okay. Okay.
So I've been in the bodybuilding world 36 years.
Okay.
Met a lot of people. Met a lot of amazing physiques.
Thank you. Thank you.
Unfortunately, not met as many amazing human beings.
Hmm.
I've also been fortunate enough to know a lot of very successful financial people, but not as many successful human beings.
Hmm.
And I think we live in this, we're in this constant drive to be the better you, the better me, but that usually involves around us being better financially or better visually. And we don't seem to focus on being the better version of you as an actual person. And I think we get our balance very heavily screwed a lot of the times. And sometimes we get to the point where we have made great physique success or progress and great financial success or progress. But actually that can be at the cost of being the better person and being the better individual. And I think very often we neglect ourselves. You could say we don't nurture our souls, we don't nurture our spirits. Probably sounds a bit too hippified for me, but I think people get where I'm going with it. It's, you know, there is, pursue your dreams, pursue your materialistic dreams. I have no issue with somebody being successful financially and being rich. Crack on, mate. Well done. Pursue the best physique you can do. Great. But never let it be at the cost of you as an individual. Remain your morals, remain your integrity, keep your honor. Too many people are too willing to sell their souls or their friends or their family to achieve financial gain. And don't get me wrong, there's always going to be sacrifice if you want to be the top of your tree, but you don't have to sell yourself.
I like that. I think that that's really a good one. I can think of people offhand that, like, to me fit that, where I've seen like, oh, wow, that person's really successful, but man, I don't want to be that person either. You know what I mean? Like, I know what they've done to get where they're at and the way they treat people. And I'm like, man, I wouldn't trade that if I had to treat people that way. And I'm not saying that you had to treat people that way to get there either.
I met a woman at the PerformX Expo, and it was business to business.
Yeah.
She was selling a bag called an exercise brick. Quite a unique concept, and they bought together to make multi-packs and everything else. And she was definitely an older lady, very, very nice woman. And we were talking about business, and we were talking about business growth and business development. In particular, we were talking about Eval's growth and development, and how I mentioned that Eval as a company, as in within our employees, has a very strong family sort of core and family feel. You know, we know the people that work for us, they're friends, you know, and we all get on. I said I didn't want to lose that. And she said she had a business with over 400 employees. She knew every individual one of them. She goes, okay, right, got difficult at that number of employees, but she knew every individual one of them. She sold that company for several million. It may have even been something like 40 million. It was a big number.
Good for her.
But the point was, this was somebody who was incredibly financially successful, ran a very successful company, but never lost sight of who she was.
Yeah.
And she was lovely. She was intriguing, amazing, interesting, and successful all at once, you know? And it was just like, you know what? That's someone I can look up to. That's someone I could aspire to be. Whereas I know people who are very financially well off that are just shit as people. Yeah.
Just I think we all shit. Do. I think we all do, you know. It's really amazing when you can find somebody that was able to stay true to themselves, you know?
It reminds me
of when we were at the Arnold, Andrea Shaw mentioned some advice that Jay Cutler gave her that stood out. And then Ron repeated it like multiple times that weekend because it really stuck with him and it really stuck with me too. He said, don't go changing on people. Hmm. Like, be the same person. Be who people expect you to be. If you've done guest posings for free for this person, then you keep doing guest posings for free for that person. That's just who you are. That's just what you've done. You know, you don't just go changing on people, and you can still make the money you need to make. Jay's been living proof of that, you know?
Zach's a great example of that. There's a guy who's been at the top of the game, and he's still the same idiot he was then as he is now.
Yeah, he seems like a cool guy.
I absolutely love Zach for it. You know, I mean, he hasn't changed one fucking bit, and I love him to bits for it. I really do. I class, there's not many people in this industry I class as true friends. I know a lot of people. I've met a lot of people.
Yeah.
Obviously, I work on a podcast with a complete dick, but that's just the pain I have to go through.
See, Dave says that to the people he likes. If he was like, yeah, Scott's an okay guy, I'd be like, oh, God, Dave must not like me very much.
He's tolerable.
Yeah, that means he doesn't like you.
Zach, I have all the time in the world for.
Yeah. Yeah, he seems like a really cool dude. People actually mentioned last week, they're like, hey, you guys should get Zach back on sometime.
Yeah, that'll get us banned again.
Yeah, yeah. I had some other questions about British stuff. We can hold off on that. Just, you know, I always have various questions to learn more about, you know, my heritage, where my people came from before we decided to leave your people. We can get to that another time. And what else did we have? We had some, we had just a few other random bits and bobs. Oh, somebody did mention, they said they just watched Under Construction for the first time. He said, I watched Under Construction 1 and 2 a few months back. Absolutely loved it. Any chance of a director's cut? Wished they were longer. He said, he'd like a bloopers reel. Were there any good bloopers from the movie that you remember?
You'd have to speak to James. So email jgfilmservices@gmail.com mm-hmm. and speak to James. I've sort of wanted to do a 3.
Really?
Yeah. Bringing it all back? Just where we are now, where we are now, you know. But James, I don't think James has the appetite for it. I mean, the films took a toll on both of us in different ways, and I think he's quite literally probably a bit.
He kind of moved away from a lot of it too. I think he's been more into guitars and stuff. Last time I talked to him.
He still does the film work and everything, but I think he knows. It's to do it justice is going to take a real commitment. And I think he's almost intimidated a little bit by that now. And I get it because it took a big toll on both of us in different ways. And the hundreds, thousands of hours of footage he had to edit.
Oh, God, yeah.
I mean, Grand Man 2 was filmed over 18 months. There was a shitload of content.
Yeah.
But
so there's got to be some. There's got to be like two more movies within that if you wanted, you know.
You know, I'm sure if he wanted to string it out, we could definitely there would definitely some. But he doesn't want. He also doesn't want to dilute the quality of what we produce. Which,
yeah,
I though I don't like the second film in a lot of ways. It's not because of the production. You know what I mean? I do rate his production and I do rate what he produced. But yeah, I wouldn't mind doing a third, just sort of where we are now, and you know, talk about Eval and the hell stuff and everything else that's gone on. I'm not sure if it would be as hard hitting.
Yeah,
and also probably a bit more get to know me as a person sort of film.
Yeah. I would watch it. I think that all of our listeners would watch it. Even if he had some excerpts that he wanted to put out on the channel, I think that people would want to watch that. I did have one other thing I forgot about. So I'll tell you what.
My food's ready.
Yeah, guys, truenutrition.com. Use our code ThinkStrongSportsNutrition for those of you in the UK. Supplementsource.ca for Canadians. Eval blood analysis. Get your lab work done by Dave. And next week, we're going to talk about this. This guy got 30 seconds here, Dave, and then we'll leave. So this is your cliffhanger because we're going to discuss this on the next show.
Enjoy magazines? Then download Readly and try it free. With over 1,500 magazines for £7.99 a month, have your favourite magazines on your screens. Anywhere, anytime, anyone. Readly for everyone.
Wait for it.
Use Readly across Wait five for devices.
It. Who's that?
Share it or keep it to yourself. Online, offline, or you
Who's
can
that guy?
£7.99 a month. Read the Readly way. Download the app.
We'll talk about that next week, guys, for another episode of the D and Stuff podcast. We'll see you soon. Thanks, Dave.
Pleasure.